Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 30th of January, and I am recording at 9:45 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time here in London. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, I'm just going to start with a little review here of stock markets so far this year, because, well, for some markets it's been a rough January. Now, all of these percentage figures, and of course this is the last day of this is the last trading day of January, and all of these figures that I'm quoting to you are in US dollars. So, starting in the Americas section, I'm obviously not going to touch on all indices, but Wall Street has not had a good January. Dow down 3.69%, S&P 3.1%, NASDAQ Composite Index did a little better, but it was still down 2.13%. We were weak in here today as well as yesterday, so we're near the lower side of some trading ranges. Now, Canada, even worse, down 8.43%. Mexico, oil producers getting hit. And the U.S. is an oil producer, but it's not its main business. Mexico down 6.63%. Brazil down 7.44%. Now, in Europe, despite the euro having fallen a lot over the month, and it hasn't steadied up all that much. It's still at 1.1280 here today. But the Euro Stoxx 50 and also the, I'll put in the UK FTSE 100 index. It's not a Eurozone member, but it's certainly in the Euro area. And they're down, both down just over half a percentage point. Again, all this is in U.S. dollar terms. But the French market up half a percent. The German market up 1.74%. That's about the best. Spain's not doing well, down over 5.5%. And what else is interesting here? Sweden up 1.18%. Switzerland, again, not an EU member, but you remember it had that big devaluation which knocked the stock market back, but it's still up nearly 1%. But Asia's where we see the most interesting picture here overall. And Japan up crosses three indices, well, on average, just over 3.25%, again, in U.S. dollars. The Hang Seng Index up 3.87%. Now, the Shanghai Composite, though, has given up some ground. It's down 1.5% here for the month. And the Chinese Hang Seng Enterprise Index is also down just over 2%. Taiwan, half a percentage point higher. South Korea, 1%. Australia, again, big resources producer, down 1.66%. And you get into India. Well, it couldn't hold that 10% that we saw yesterday. But it's up 8%, and that's despite a key day reversal. We did have 10 consecutive days, or eight rather, consecutive days to the upside. I commented on this yesterday, both in writing and in the audio. And we had a small downside key day reversal from just under that 30,000 level, which is obviously around a phobia point. So I think a reaction and consolidation has commenced here. And other indices, Asian indices, well, the other star performer here is Thailand, up 6.22%. We have a small decline for Indonesia and Malaysia down 2.45%. But most of these indices, most of these Asia Pacific indices are outperforming Wall Street. And New Zealand didn't do so well, down 3.87%. Okay, I hope that I hope you found that interesting. I certainly certainly did. Now, what's affecting Wall Street? Well, valuations, number one. Also, the oil sector, which was producing a lot, particularly the shale side, this has been hit very hard here, and that's also going to result in layoffs. There probably will also be some probable problem, I should say, problem loans, particularly some of the newer startup, highly leveraged shale companies. Their shares have plummeted. They're laying off personnel. Rigs are idle. And they're heavily in debt, so there are some bust candidates here, and that's weighing on the U.S. banking sector here overall. So, and then the headwind from the strong U.S. dollar, dollar index up again today, 94.865. That's not doing any favors here. For the multinational autonomies, some of them though are doing very well and have hedged the risks. Some others, inevitably, not doing so well. So, there you have it. I think looking at these stock markets, uncertainty for sure. Right now, the Wall Street markets are still ranging, and indices rather are still ranging, and in tight ranges to the left side of their rising 200-day moving averages. But another week like this one, and we'll have some clear breaks of those moving averages overall. I think next week's going to be interesting. People will be remembering January 2014, which was also a choppy and weaker month for Wall Street, but then it picked up very effectively in February. Could that happen again? Well, yes, it could, in my opinion, but I want to see the evidence of that, and there's no doubt that we're in a more volatile environment, which I think is going to persist for a while, possibly over the next few years. And we need to see, of course, growth pick up. We need to see a normalization of interest rates. And beyond that point, though, I think that we will start to have very clear evidence that we have not just a bull market caused by quantitative easing and a huge amount of liquidity, but that we will have a clear evidence of a bull market which is of the secular variety, as in very long term, at least a couple of decades. And the for that the key factors behind that, and these will be familiar to you, so I'll go through them quickly here, will be the biggest and most important one by far. This is really is the story of this era. Is the accelerated rate of technological innovation. I don't know how many times you've heard me say that, but I make no apologies for repeating the point, because this is the most exciting thing that is actually going on in terms of human achievements. And it is an accelerating rate of technological innovation that has no natural ending point. In other words, it's going to take something like a doomsday rock Maybe the machines all take over, but I'm playing playing now. But for the next few decades, we can expect to see technology just continuing to record miraculous breakthroughs. Corporations are at least as big beneficiaries of that technological innovation as any individuals, and although we all benefit from it, the trickiest bit is how you rate technology companies. And that's hard because really it's a fast changing, fast developing field. And I think the best way to play it is choosing companies that are benefiting the most from the actual technologies. Although, again, with technology shares themselves, I think probably technical medium to longer term trend running tactics are a more effective way of dealing with the sector than some of the longer term projections. Okay, now what else is going on here in the world? This is I'm going to talk about interest rates here now, and these government rates. Wow, the U.S. 10-year today hits a new low down to 1.654. Is that a new low or have I told a lie? I hate to do that, not intentionally, of course. Let me just put it up a chart. Have a drink of water. I think I'm wrong in this new all-time low. Yes, I am. I beg your pardon. I am way wrong on that new all-time low, but it's a new low really since 2013. And I'll repeat that level here, 1.654%. But back in 2012, that's when we had the lowest yield for these 10-year bonds. And I can even tell you the level, it was 1.3790. So we're still a little above that, but we continue to head very much in that direction. Now, what are some of the factors here? Well, the worrying one, depending on how true it actually is, would be a deterioration in global GDP growth. U.S. growth for the fourth quarter came out today. It was clearly lower than the third and fourth quarters of last year. And I think we know the headwinds. I've already mentioned them, and that whole fracking sector. That's certainly important. The strong U.S. dollar, albeit off virtually a 40-year low, but it moved up very quickly, and so that inevitably causes headwinds for companies. That is a big factor. And technology itself, this is a positive a factor for the most part, but technology has a positive deflationary pressure. Positive deflationary pressure in the sense that you can sell more for less cost, and that's and higher profits. And that's what we see with some good good techie industries. Okay, so I think that's a factor behind the bonds, but there is concern over global GDP growth here generally, and those U.S. bonds are higher than a number of the other a number of the other bonds. I was going to go back into talking here about these government bonds, but they're generally lower, and the rates. The only exceptions we're seeing, you get a situation like Greece, and They're talking. The Greeks themselves are saying this is not a negotiation. This is a revolution here. Well, it'd be interesting to see how that actually plays out. We know Greece wants to stay in the euro, so I assume that some sort of compromise will be reached. Also, the European countries, they may say they don't mind if Greece leaves, but if Greece leaves, then that inevitably others will be watching very closely, other southern European countries, and saying, well, maybe we'd be better off out as well. So it's a messy situation here overall, but and that's we have these incredibly low yields in most countries, but not in a troubled economy where there's a lot of uncertainty, such as Greece. And also, we see a lot of the bonds, some of the industrial bonds, and not least in the energy sector, and not least among the shale corporations. Investors were gobbling those up, and those yields have soared back up, and the bond values have plunged really quite dramatically. So that's going to drive, I think, a few more people, or is driving a few more people into the into the government bond sector overall. Now, I want to come back. I said I'd come back into stock markets. These are always unscripted audios. So what's best having and I'll say that I think that a lot depends on what Wall Street actually does because it's so influential. For instance, some people are calling for a bear market. Now, that's happened every single year going. We have not been calling for a bear market, and I'm not certainly not calling for a bear market now. But if we were to get a down year, and that would surprise me, because this is a good year. Well, the seasonal implications are quite attractive, as I've discussed previously. And we do have the low energy. We're not going to get any big interest rate increases, although we'll likely get a quarter of a percentage point increase, but that's hardly a dramatic headwind. So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful, but the pattern is losing its consistency up here. And as I described earlier, Wall Street's a little bit expensive. So what will do better? Well, if Wall Street does really badly, then it'll drag down a lot of other markets. On the other hand, if Wall Street just ranges near current levels, and I think it should do a little better than that, but if it just ranges, then Europe, I think, will do considerably better, because looking beyond the Greek situation, that Mario Draghi QE exercise, we know what QE does for stock markets. They're the biggest beneficiaries. And I think that would be repeated, and Germany would lead the way. Now, what about the Asia-Pacific region overall? Well, I mentioned yesterday in both my audio and also in my written commentary that we'd had 8 days on the upside consecutively for the Indian indices. The Sensex was approaching that big psychological round of phobia number of 30,000. It was overextended relative to the MA and due for a bit of a pullback in consolidation. And we had a downside key day reversal here today. But India is still a top performing stock market, and it's got a good steady currency. It's got a lot of goodwill now being directed towards India, not least from the United States. I wrote about that yesterday, and I think it will remain one of the top performers. Way to play it, particularly if markets become more volatile, which would not be surprising, is you only buy it following a setback when we get those Short-term stochastic indicators clearly moving back to oversold levels, and we get down closer to the MA, rising MA. China, very much of an enigma, as I've said in the past. Get all kinds of extreme views with China, but it is the world's second largest economy. It still has a growth rate, which the consensus is around 7%. Let's take a really cynical view and say, well, maybe it's only 5%, but that's still not a bad growth rate for the world's second largest economy. This is an interesting shift that China is actually making here, going from being very much a metal bashing, polluting manufacturer and trying to change it into a middle class consumer society. And good luck to them. It's a laudable aim. I wouldn't be surprised if they can pull it off. Command economies are scary in many respects, but they are using what is clearly a capitalistic methodology, and they really have been since Deng Xiaoping took over in 1978. And I'm backing China, as you know. A shares are due for a medium term, or I think they've commenced a medium term consolidation period. The Hong Kong indices are pegged to the U.S. dollar, so they've had a firm currencies. Their Hong Kong currency is pegged to the U.S. dollar, so that's been a bit of a headwind here overall, but I like the prospects. I think China could still have a very good year, and I think that Japan also. I think that Japan is building up to another move to the upside, and the Asian region generally is overall quite good. So I really do like that. What don't I like? Well, the primarily heavily dependent on resources markets, and they tend to be a little chaotic anyway. And I'm thinking of Brazil and Venezuela, Russia. I wouldn't touch those with barge poles here on the governance issue. Not to mention the dependence on commodities, which are weak. Will we get a bottoming out in that commodity sector here at some point? Well, this year, I hope so, because they've pulled back really quite substantially, and I think it would be a sign of growth also picking up somewhat. Now, before I talk about other commodities in here, I should just run through the currencies, which have become more volatile. The dollar strong move to the upside, the weakness of the commodity producing currencies, for the most part, that's really quite pronounced and very understandable. The quantitative easing has certainly put the euro under pressure, but it was well anticipated. So we've probably seen most of the euro's downside move. Here it is at 112.91. What do I mean by most? Could it get down to 100? Yes. Yes, it could, but again, it would still that would not invalidate my comment that we've seen most of the downside move here, really from the highs that we were seeing in 2014 for the euro. Its role as the second most important reserve currency has kept it stronger than it would have been otherwise. QE is rectifying that that situation. Now, the Indian currency relatively steady here overall, but we are still seeing where we see the slow growth and deflationary pressures. We are getting a softening of currencies, and that is something that we may certainly see for a while longer here overall. On a really a long-term outlook basis, the most successful manufacturing countries tend to have the firmer currencies. And so that would really favor the US, which I would be a long-term bull of what the US dollar does, although I think it's overextended here on a medium-term basis. And I don't think the euro is going to survive over the next couple of decades. Maybe we get to two different currencies within the eurozone. The hard northern region version of the euro and a southern version region, but we will see. That would not surprise me at all. Now, looking at these very important commodity markets, we had quite an exciting development here today. The oil price. It started with Brent crude, and as I speak, we're still getting a little trading after hours. But Brent crude today is at $52.48. That's up $3.35, and we've had an upside breakout of that very narrow, tight little range that it was in. Just been going sideways day after day after day. And well, 12 or 13 days, and upside a clear upside breakout. Now that's the first clear technical evidence of bottoming activity. And assuming that there are quite a few shorts in the oil market, we could get some upside follow through here next week. Now, I know there's still plenty of oil sloshing around, and the Saudis are holding their tough line overall. But depending on the size of the short positions, we have the potential here for, let's assume that they're quite substantial. We have the potential for, if you look at weekly charts, of a V spike formation. In other words, that steep downward decline, and then we get a sharp rally, perhaps up into the mid-60s to $70 region, and then a long pullback and lengthy right-hand extension phase. Those of you who've been to the chart seminar, V bottom with right-hand extension. And that extension can be a very lengthy process, and I would expect it to be. And it can get back very close to, and occasionally even slightly below, the previous low that we saw in the V formation. So I think again, just to repeat the point, I'm looking forward here. We only have really conclusive evidence after the event, but I think we have the potential here, or I think this is the first sign, the first clear evidence of a bottoming out activity here for the oil prices. And people won't believe it yet, but you've got my view there. And I think a somewhat firmer oil price would help some of these stock markets generally, because people are extrapolating it and just coming up with very, very bearish views for the global economy, which there are plenty of headwinds for the global economy, but I think the big bear stories, big deflation stories, are exaggerated. I certainly hope so, at any rate. But the forecast is based on, I think, not on hopes, but reality here against the background of these central banks' stimuluses. Okay, what else is going on in commodities? We've got a bounce in precious metals, well, some of them, which were clobbered yesterday, as you know. And as I speak, silver is the one that's done best. It's the most volatile one, back up to 17 and a quarter, 17.26 as I speak. That's up nearly 49 cents, but it did fall, I think, $1.10. At one point, it was down $1.25 yesterday. We've got platinum here at $1,240 and change. That's up over $23. And gold bullion back up to 1,283, nearly 1,284. That's up over $26 in here. So lively activity there. We also saw a bounce in a number of the industrial metals and copper. The U.S. copper is up over 5 cents here, back to 250 and change. And elsewhere, palladium virtually unchanged. Let's see, the grains and beans, well, they're lower in here today. And that's pretty much it. I can see coffee a little bit firmer. And I will wish you a very, very good weekend. All the very best, and we'll look forward to what is bound to be an interesting and hopefully profitable February. And by the way, just to make one last little point and make a plug, if you're anywhere near London, going to be anywhere near London for our late February chart seminar. I beg your pardon. I beg your pardon. Not the chart seminar. I'm getting this fatigue creeping over me. the markets now. Our markets now session. Don't miss it. I think you'll be interested in the great guest speaker. Okay. All the very best. Have a terrific weekend.